This is Scripture Read Badly,
a podcast where two grown-up pastors' kids discuss the stories of the Bible in chronological order,
attempting to avoid heresy and generally having a good time.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Ryan.
Sit back and rejoice. Today's verse comes from Exodus 34, verse 17, with a soundtrack of church bells.
Mm.
You shall not make for yourself any gods of cast metal. So, I suppose we can just make it out of car tire material or 3D printing gods. Burp, burp, burp. This is Scripture Read Badly. I'm Jeremy Barry Randall.
My name's Ryan, and today we're talking about Exodus chapter 34. This is the chapter in which Moses creates two new stone tablets on which to write some laws, and God renews his covenant yet again. This is becoming a bit of
a
habit.
He loves to do it.
He does. And then we end this chapter with the shining face of Moses, which is I'm looking forward to getting to that, because it's quite an interesting point of discussion if you consider the New Testament parallels. Okay. So we start out with just on the back of God, the back of God's head, maybe, but not necessarily. Not really sure. Just quickly,
not really sure what that is.
What do you think? What is the cleft of the rock? I'm just a little bit confused. What is a cleft?
Well, the priest just came out of the church and they're wearing like yellow robes.
Wow.
A cleft is that thing in your face, right? In your lip.
Yes.
It's like a little indent.
It's a split. Mm-hmm.
So I assume a cleft in the rock. Oh, he's got a cool hat. I assume a cleft is a little indent in the rock so he can hide and not see God's face, because he will surely die.
Mm-hmm.
And a cleft in... Yeah, that's a good part of a hymn that I can't remember the
Rock
melody.
Of Ages, cleft for me.
Yep, so good.
Yep.
So, I wonder if there's a better word than cleft.
I mean, cleft...
Hang on, what part of the... What part of it is this?
That's right at the end of chapter 33 in verse 22. It says, I'll put you in a cleft of the rock. Do you think God kind of sealed him so that he could only see through a slit? That's kind of how I've always pictured it, but it might not be true.
Whoa, and he covered it with his hand, so he could have touched it. He could have held hands with Jesus.
Wow.
Or God, I suppose. Jesus, God. Who knows? Or maybe just high-five him because the hand is so big.
Yes. So strong and so mighty. There's nothing the hand cannot do.
Zero.
Yeah, sweet.
Except build a rock that's too big for him to hold.
Right? Yes, that's right. God could definitely eat a taco too big for him to eat.
Whoa, I love that idea. That could feed me for a while. Although it'd go off pretty quick because it's cheese and meat.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
All right.
So back to the cleft.
God had maybe... We couldn't figure this out last episode, and we hadn't heard from you guys because we recorded these back-to-back. We couldn't figure out if it had actually happened by then or if it was just God saying he would do that. Regardless, let's move on. So God instructs Moses to cut for himself two more tablets of stone like the first. What did he use as a tool? A rock? A pickaxe?
He probably had one of those cool laser cutters.
That's what I
thought.
God
just lent it to him for the day from his tool shed. He's like, how do I use this? Ooh, this is good. And then he just cut way too many tablets. And God's like, whoa, settle down.
Whoa, hang on.
We just need two.
What if he not only cut out tablets, but then he cut out an image of God that he saw, and then God's like, oh, that reminds me of something I need to remind you of. Don't make yourself any carven images out of iron. And Moses is like, good, well, this is rock, so we're sweet here, right?
Yeah, so, feature.
Okay.
Gives him a little cheeky grin. They're coming back in their little robes. I can't see the bishop, though.
Can we have a little more commentary? I like this.
Okay, just imagine cream, like cream yellow.
Like off
and they're,
cream.
And they're like giant arm-opened robes.
You mean like sleeveless?
This is the bishop. Yeah, sleeveless robes. Whoa. That like encompass them. And so it flows as they're going.
Like overalls?
Yeah.
But a
and
dress.
There's the bishop. There's Mindaugas, and he's got a sweet hat.
What's his name?
Mindaugas.
Oh, that's so good.
He's such a good guy.
Mindaugas. Yeah. Oh, man.
And that's the Lithuanian king. So heaps of dudes around his age are called that. Or Gediminas, which is their other big leader.
Wow.
But they look so cool, all dressed up. I want robes. Maybe I should go to seminary. Should I go to seminary and just become a priest?
You could if you want. Or you could just get some robes.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's much easier. And I don't have to agree to things I don't agree to.
Mm. You could be a...
I really want to become an Orthodox priest, because then I can get married just before I get ordained and still have sweet babies.
Mm.
But I get to grow a sweet beard and smell incense all day.
Wow.
Oh, that's the dream.
Wow. Okay.
Anyway.
That's a...
And...
That is a...
For you shall worship no other god.
And we're back from a brief look into Jeremy's mind. All right. Yep. So God tells him to cut two tablets, and that God will write on the tablets the words that were on the first tablets, which you broke, he says to Moses. Can you imagine God telling you that? So I did this thing for you. Yep. I made these tablets, which I don't remember if Moses had to cut the first tablets. I don't think he did. But God said, here's these tablets. They have my words on them. And then Moses goes, yeah, shoot, gosh darn it. Crack.
Smash.
Breaks them on the side, on the foot of the mountain when he sees that people are worshipping a golden calf. And then he goes back up to God. And God's like, oh, come on, man. All right, you cut the tablets this time. You know how long it took me to make those tablets? All right, you cut them. And I'll write on them. That's fine. I'll use my papyrus script, and then I'll sign it. That's right. And we'll sell it to James Cameron, and he'll make a blockbuster out of papyrus. Okay.
Ooh, Avatar. Hello, James Cameron.
Wait, did he just show up in your studio or something?
No.
Hello, James Cameron.
That would be weird.
Oh,
okay. Side point, though. So I have a friend who... Oh, I think I talked about her last episode, who's making this series about the Romanovs, and she's a movie producer, and she just offhandedly talks about people that she knows. And last night I was having dinner with a friend who asked if she knew this actor that I'd never heard of. Mm-hmm. So I asked, and she was like, yeah, I'm like really good friends with him. Oh, friends that have famous friends. It's just so good.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's where the story was going. All right. You know Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Sure do.
Have you watched it in the last few years?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had it. I watched it on a bus the other day, and I remember that it was one of those movies that my parents didn't let me watch because it had evil overtones.
Right.
And I think I fell asleep in the middle of it. But it's just so funny how much Christian Jewishness is in there. Mm. It was so fascinating.
Even in the Holy
and
Grail,
how
too.
Yeah, oh, I haven't watched that.
Oh, The Last Crusade, I mean. That's what it's called.
Yeah, let's just call it The Holy Grail.
Yeah. But, that's Monty Python.
The tablets that he laser cut in this verse. Now I've forgotten what happened in the Lost Ark. Wow, that is a very anticlimactic story.
Are you talking about when they opened up at the end and the Nazis had their faces melted off?
No, even before that, they just said something about how the plates were lost, and they didn't... No, the broken ones, they put the broken bits in the ark, and that's what was in the ark all the time. And I was like, what? I don't remember that part of the story.
I don't think so, but
anyway,
okay, that's
whatever.
Interesting.
Thanks, Indiana Jones.
Wow. Major letdown. Great, well, okay... Now, cracking the whip back on this story, we have God says, be ready by the morning and come up on the mountain. Come up in the morning to Mount Sinai. Remember, that's only about 350 meters off the ground, so it's not very far.
Yep.
And present yourself there to me on the top of the mountain. No one shall come up with you, and let no one be seen throughout all the mountain. Let no flocks or herds graze opposite the mountain. Question about that.
Interesting.
What does opposite the mountain mean? Does it mean opposite in all directions, meaning don't let any of them graze at all?
Yeah, just make them sit down all day.
Okay, thought so. Or
maybe there was a mountain opposite and they weren't allowed on the opposite mountain because then they'd see more high.
Oh, okay. Or there was a field or a pasture or something where they could maybe see the top of the...
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
And God just didn't want that.
Yep. All right. So...
He wants to keep it a secret that he has a laser cutter in his tool shed.
Yep. So Moses cuts the two tablets... rises early the next morning, goes up to Sinai, as God said, and he took in his hand two tablets of stone. And God descended in the cloud and stood with him there and proclaimed his name Yahweh. There we go.
Is that what yours says?
No, it says, and proclaimed the name of the Lord. I was just paraphrasing as I was reading. Weird.
The Lord passed before him and proclaimed the Lord, the Lord. Yeah, yeah.
So that's where God passes before him. We found it. Woohoo! Great. Thanks to everyone that told us on social media, and we didn't listen because we recorded these back to back. But we found it. Verse 6 of chapter 34. The Lord passed before him and proclaimed the Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, keeping steadfast love for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgressions and sin, but who will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children and the children's children to the third and the fourth generation. And Moses quickly bowed his head toward the earth and worshipped. And he said, if now I have found favor in your sight, O Lord, please let the Lord go in the midst of us, for it is a stiff-necked people, and pardon our iniquity and our sin, and take us for your inheritance. So that is the culmination of everything that we read in chapter 33, where God said that he wouldn't go with them, and then Moses pleaded, and then God said that he would pass before him and show him his glory. So this is exactly what chapter 33 was leading up to here in the first section of chapter 34.
Is this also the first place that God talks about himself?
No, I'm sure it's not.
Okay.
Because he says, I mean, he, as in saying the Lord, like a third person thing, or rather three person thing.
Oh, hello.
Hello. I think he does it elsewhere with Moses before this. I think when he's first,
when he says, I am. In the burning bush.
I don't think that counts. I think the first one is where God is instructing Moses about what is to come. And he says something like, you must go and say to Pharaoh, the Lord, blah, blah, blah. But then, I don't really think the burning bush counts. But it might. Oh. I could be wrong.
But this is definitely one of those things that people come back to a ton.
Hmm.
Because he's describing himself quite detailedly.
Yeah. It's a beautiful description.
It is definitely a beautiful description.
Yeah. I think really...
Which is like mirrored and confirmed in Jesus.
Mm. Yeah. I think really if there is any part of the Bible where you can find a verse that sums up the character of God, this is it. And the fact that there is such an emphasis placed on his mercy, his grace, his patience, slow to anger, his abundance of steadfast love and faithfulness.
Yep.
And his faithfulness to keep that love and also to forgive and to not abide any transgression and sin. I think that is just so good at summarizing the character of God. I mean, I think most of us would give our lives to be able to have at least part of that assigned to us, to people describe yep. us as abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. But then if they were to do that, then I'm sure that it would be quite obvious that those characteristics were those of God coming through us. So
yep.
this is the root of the fruits of the Spirit too.
Yeah, I was going to say that before. I think that's a pretty good description of him also.
Yeah, the description of the of love too in 1 Corinthians 13 is very similar in a lot of ways to this. And
did you have that read at your wedding?
No, we actually had something from Galatians.
Smart.
Yeah. We're not cliche. But then also it was the passage that I can't remember the verse. I'm sorry, Fiona. But it was the one that says, above all these, put on love, which...
Oh, yeah.
Binds, surrounds, and penetrates. No, that was the force. You know the one I was talking about. It's yep, yeah.
I do.
Talking about how good
it's
love is.
It's also that the fruit forgive of the Spirit's on that.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
The fruit of the Spirit's not an apple. The fruit of the Spirit's not a... No? You didn't sing that at your wedding?
No. No, I've actually never heard that.
That's I've naturally. I think we should put that into
naturally the naturally heard that.
I've naturally never ever actually. Heard that.
Yep.
Because if you've got an apple, you might as well eat it, because it's not the fruit of the Spirit. The Spirit is love, joy, peace. Best song ever. That means that I know all the fruits of the Spirit.
That is cool. I know all the books of the Bible. What? I know all the books of the Bible because of a song like that.
I know all the books of the Bible, except I miss three of them because I've taught myself the song wrong.
Oh.
Hebrews, James, 1st and 2nd Peter, 1st and 2nd and 3rd John. I think I missed all of the books just then. Anyway.
Jude and Revelation. Then,
exactly. I always get to Jude and Revelation way too early. Then God says, behold, I am making a covenant before all your people. I will do marvels such as have not been created in all the earth or in any nation. Which is funny that he says that because he's already done some of those.
Yeah.
And all the people among you whom you are shall see the work of the Lord, for it is an awesome thing that I will do with you. And that should almost shock anyone actually following what God's doing, because yeah. he's already done so much stuff.
So he's promising even more.
Like, yeah.
Crazy. And he's also saying that everyone will see it. Do you think seeing the work of the Lord negates people from being grafted into the promise? Or do you think if they
What? Say that again?
It says all the people among whom you are... All the people among whom you are shall see the work of the Lord, for it is an awesome thing that I do with you. All the people that they are among, meaning all the inhabitants of the land,
yep,
they will see the work of the Lord. Does that necessarily imply that they will have wrath poured out upon them, or... Is it more like, this is an open invitation, you see what God is doing here, if you want to know more, come forward. Like that type of thing. I feel like I'm not making sense.
Yeah, I don't understand what you're asking. What's the wrath of the Lord coming from?
I'm just... So God...
Is this a joke that I'm not getting?
No, it's not a joke. Because
I can fake laugh.
That was a nice fake laugh. No, what I'm saying is God says elsewhere that he will have love for those that love him, and he will curse those who curse him, blah, blah, blah. Yep. Obviously, the inhabitants of the land do not love him because they do not know him, but they will see the work of the Lord. Do you think this is God saying that there is the potential for redemption for the people that you will be among because they will Definitely. See the work of the Lord? That's what I was trying to get at.
Yep. Yeah. And he definitely revisits that idea all the way through the Pentateuch with the whole use of the word alien
mm-hmm.
and how they are to treat them a specific way. and how there's ways that they can become almost Israelites without actually becoming Israelites. So yes, I think, and the whole thing of them being the priesthood and a nation to show the other nations that God is so good.
Hmm.
With the hopeful conclusion being that they become a part of his kingdom.
Yeah, it's just interesting that it isn't laid out as explicitly as that in a lot of places. But I'm sure that they would have understood that if people came to them seeking refuge and seeking the Lord, they wouldn't have said, no, you're a heathen, die, and then killed them.
Yep.
They would have accepted them. And God does say that. You're right. And if people grow up in a society where they know the law backwards and forwards, then they would know that there are commandments about that very thing.
Yeah.
But if you're someone like me, who knows it vaguely, but can't remember all the laws, then I might be a little bit confused and have to go to the priest. Then they might say, yeah, you can let them live. They wouldn't be part of it. Yeah, dude,
don't stab that guy. But it's just a weirdly worded sentence. And all the people among whom you are shall see the work of the Lord.
Classic ESV. Oh, that's among awesome. Among whom you are.
Whom is one of those weird words that I don't know how to use ever. When the Lion King makes you cough.
God reiterates that he will drive out before them the Amorites, Canaanites, Hittites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. We also know that there are other ones by the time they get there who they also need to drive out. Whom they also need to drive out.
Is that the correct usage?
That is one of the correct usages, yeah.
Nice.
With
of whom?
One of the peoples with whom they may fight. God tells them to take care, lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land to which you go, lest it become a snare in your midst. So he used lest twice in that sentence. Way to go. Breaking all rules of writing. That guy. You shall tear down their altars and break their pillars and cut down their asherim, for you shall worship no other god, for the Lord whose name is Jealous, with a capital J, is a jealous God. I guess that makes sense. He's not really leaving anything to the imagination there. My name is Jealous. Nope. I am a jealous God. That's great. And then he says again, lest you make covenant with the inhabitants of the land. And when they whore after their gods and sacrifice to their gods and you are invited, you eat of his sacrifice and you take of their daughters for your sons and their daughters whore after their gods and make your sons whore after their gods. You shall not... Oh, then it goes into the caste metal thing. But that's God's very first warning to the people of Israel that they shall not make any covenants with the inhabitants of the land, because it will be a snare. He says lest multiple times. The Hebrew words, when they are repeated, they emphasize them. God is saying, because this will happen, he's pointing out that there are ramifications if you do this. Don't do this.
It's funny that they use the word whore so many times.
I know.
I think just before I left Canberra, I was reading the Pentateuch a lot of times, and I was in a hardcore band, and all of my lyrics that I was writing, for some reason, had the word whore over and over again. And I wasn't the lead singer. I was writing lyrics for the lead singer, and he would read them and just be like, dude, like, why do you keep using the word whore? I don't want to say that. My mum will come to shows. And he was like 18 at the time, so he was not a big fan of saying whore in front of his mum. And I was like, oh, I wonder why there's so much whore in my lyrics. But it's this.
Yep.
God talks about whores so much because it's a perfect
analogy, picture
of how the people would whore after other gods.
Totally. Yep. It's not just adding them to the list of gods that you follow, but it is changing aligning everything yourself about you to... essentially covet the presence and the attention of what you are trying to focus on.
Yep.
Crazy. Okay, so don't make for yourself any gods of cast metal. Maybe he was putting that in there just in case Moses didn't get it when he said don't make any idols. But also,
I'm curious about why it's specific though. And did they have much metal?
Well, didn't they just do that with the golden calf? Wasn't that cast metal?
Oh, there you go, boom.
So they poured it into a cast, and then it,
yeah,
it just jumped out. They put them in the fire, and it jumped out as a as a golden cow. I don't know what happened. I don't know where it came from. Do you know where it came from?
I don't know where this cow came from.
Classic. I had a little Numa reference right there. Does that make me a heretic if I reference Rob Bell?
No.
What? Yeah, it's
his Instagram feed is very strange.
I don't follow him
in a funny haha way.
Okay. Well,
you don't do Instagram?
I do Instagram. I do our Instagram, Jeremy. But
oh yeah, I remember that.
But when it comes to Rob Bell, I don't follow him on social media. But I think he gets a bad rap.
Philosophy.
Yeah. We did talk a little bit about that in our controversial theology episodes around Christmas time. Kind of.
I do remember that.
A little bit. Alright, so...
That was only 3 months ago, and it feels like it was forever ago.
Oh my goodness, does it ever. Both our life circumstances have changed drastically since that moment. You're over there...
In the best ways, but...
You're over in Lithuania, in the freezing cold, having a play-by-play commentary of priests as they walk down the road in their golden overalls.
In their man dresses.
And I'm married, living in the Gold Coast in a share house where we have one room to ourselves.
And no windows.
And no windows. Just a skylight that wakes me up at 6 o'clock every morning. Oh, man. Oh, how times have changed.
Are you still studying, or is it break?
Yeah,
study break.
Well, it's a study break until right after Easter, so by the time this airs, nice. I'm back to work. This term I'm studying intercultural communication and introduction to video production, so I'm very excited.
Yep.
Okay, so back to the text. God reminds them of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Remember Taco Tuesday, that's what he's really saying.
Yeah.
7 days you have tacos. 7 days in a row you have unleavened bread. As I commanded you at the time appointed in the month of Abib. I wonder if you could observe that with tacos. If you just had
there's no leaven in it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Burritos for 7 days.
Oh, Seder meal is coming up soon. Maybe I should take tacos. Is this Seder meal? No, this isn't. Oh, maybe it is.
I don't know.
I've got to ask my friend. But it's just funny that this Taco Tuesday is to remember people coming out of the womb.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very weird. All that open the womb are mine.
Yep. All... So eat tacos.
Yeah. You have lots of babies. I think that's what it's saying.
Yeah, babies are the best. And then he reminds them of the Sabbath.
Yep.
Which is, once again, a reminder that they aren't slaves, that they're free, but they need to institute some peace into their lives.
Mm-hmm. Observe the Feast of Weeks, first fruits.
I don't know what that is.
Of the wheat harvest. Yeah, I'm a...
And the Feast of Ingathering.
Ingathering.
Maybe we should do an episode of some of the feasts later on when we get to Leviticus.
Yeah, where we actually get into detail of them. That'd be good.
So, skip, skip, skip.
Blah, blah, blah.
For I will cast our nations before you and enlarge your borders. Mm. No one shall covet your land when you go up to appear before the Lord your God 3 times in the year.
But if they if that's... do any more or less, then they will covet the land?
Possibly.
Hmm.
Yeah, these are just a lot of reminders of different gatherings and feasts.
Verse 26b,
yep.
You shall not boil a young goat in its mother's milk.
Oh, no, that's what I had for breakfast.
You should have read Exodus, man. You should have read Exodus.
That's ridiculous. That's my favorite.
Oh.
And that we'll get into that in Leviticus too. There's a few things like that.
No crayfish.
Just keeps bringing
no
up.
Pig. blah, blah, blah.
So he was there with the Lord 40 days and nights. Mm-hmm. He drank no water, ate no bread.
Who does that remind me of? And he wrote on the tablets.
Jesus. Whoa, Taco Tuesday, the world's favorite Mexican.
Wow, come on. Coming
together at last.
Come on. Come on.
And then we get to the best part of the chapter.
Mm.
The shining face.
So do you think... So I wonder about this. Obviously, humans have physical needs. Jesus had a need to eat and drink when he was in the wilderness. Moses had a need to eat and drink when he was on Mount Sinai. Do you think that with Moses, he was not necessarily aware of his physical need because of how weird and out of body the whole experience would have been?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay.
That sounds highly possible.
But with Jesus, he was confronted by the humanity because every day for him was face to face with God.
Yep.
Wow. Whoa. Okay, cool.
That's crazy.
I like that. I like that a lot. Okay, so God wrote on the tablets the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. So the Ten Commandments seem to, not only are they capitalized, but they summarize the covenant itself. Because they start with, I am the Lord your God. So it is establishing the relationship and then the commandments afterwards. And everything is summed up within those commandments. For now, at least, because we get the love the Lord your God and love your neighbor later on in Deuteronomy. So, then we have the shining face of Moses. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai, with the two tablets of the testimony in his hands as he came down the mountain, Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone because he had been talking with God. Do you think he was just really tanned? Or really sweaty?
He was just sweaty.
Yeah.
Like super... Ooh. Like when a pregnant lady first gets pregnant and she glows. Plus the sweatiness. Because he's pregnant with covenant.
Man, I love pregnant and birth analogies in the church. It's awesome.
Yeah, me too. They're the greatest.
Especially when people are talking about things being the birth canal and the womb and everything. Great, great imagery. Love it.
Yeah,
love it.
Thanks, Dad. it glows so much that he has to put a veil on. So I don't think it is just a tan.
Yeah, they were afraid to come near him. It's definitely something freakier. Do you think that was because they were afraid that their sin would be exposed?
Definitely.
I mean, otherwise they're just like, whoa, man, your face is shiny. I don't like it. I'm staying away. It looks super weird.
All those times just before you have communion or the Lord's Supper and you're like, ooh, I need to confess to all of my sins right now.
Oh, crap. I forgot to bring that one up. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. So, Moses called to them. And Aaron and all the leaders of the congregation returned to him, and Moses talked with them. Afterward, all the people of Israel came near. He commanded them all everything that God had said. And when he finished speaking, he put a veil over his face. Like a wedding veil?
Yeah. He's now the bride.
Okay. In an interesting twist where... Now he is embodying the bride of Christ, perhaps?
Boom. Yep.
Okay.
And he's... I'm not going to say that.
Maybe it's the first foreshadowing of that.
Yeah. And put the veil on, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, and it was like recharged every time he talked to God because he had to keep putting the veil on. Like, oh, the glow's going down, I'll go back to talk to the Lord.
Well, maybe it was just that every time he came back out, people would be like, ah, what's up with your face? Oh, man, this again? Fine. I just want to be able to eat with people. I want to be able to be with my wife. Life. I want to see my grandkids. What is up with you people? It's just the glory of the Lord. Come on.
It's just the glory of the Lord.
He only had two sons that we know of.
Oh.
Don't know how many daughters, but he only had two sons with Zipporah. Don't know how many kids he had in Egypt, if he had any.
True.
Could have. I don't know.
But his two sons may have had bunches.
Oh, yeah. His two sons at least had some kids, because Moses' grandkid is one of the priests in a story in Judges. Oh, interestingly yeah. enough.
But if they're walking around tons, who wants to get pregnant while that's happening? Like, I don't want to be pregnant when I'm walking around all the time. Well, maybe their birth rates took a dive.
But they have beasts of burden, remember? They kept the donkeys. Oh,
true. Just put the wife on the beast.
Yep. Wife on the beast.
Get on the beast.
Beauty on the beast. Okay. Well,
it's a different movie.
Yeah. Well, in this in the last 5, 10, 15 minutes, whatever we have left, I want to talk about the New Testament the veil that is put up in the temple, which is yep. not necessarily it's not the New Testament. It's very much in the Old Testament, but by the time Jesus comes around, this veil has been there for thousands of years. And it is separating. We'll find out once the temple is brought up in Kings or Samuel or whatever, which is going to be awesome. Can't wait to get there in however many years that is.
2 years.
It's going to be great. So the veil is put up to separate the Holy of Holies from the holy place, from the outer court, from the outer court or whatever it is in the temple. And only one priest, once per year, can go into the Holy of Holies to make atonement for the sins of the people of Israel.
Yeah.
And so then that was symbolically, because that's kind of, it has a similar thing to the inner part of the Tent of Meeting, where only Moses could go in there, because it was the most holy place where God's tangible physical glory was. The veil in the temple had a very similar purpose. So Moses here has a veil, and I've heard people preach sermons on this. I've heard people give devotionals on this. I've even had my own personal revelation about this. But when the temple curtain tears in two, it did separate the people from the presence of God, in a physical kind of way, at least in a representation. When Jesus died and the temple curtain tore in two, that was symbolizing that the Spirit of God was going out into the people, that everybody would have access to the Spirit of God. So then, then you think about the veil of Moses. It's pretty much the same thing the Holy of Holies is, where it's showing the glow of the Lord, that he's being recharged every time he's in the presence of God, and so he has a veil to separate that shining glory of God from the people.
Yep.
So then if he takes it off, or if he didn't have it on in the presence of the people, they freaked out because they suddenly saw their sin and they knew that they were insufficient to be holy and all that type of thing. So what is your take on the parallels between the temple curtain and the veil of Moses?
Because if it is a releasing of the Spirit, then the Spirit's perfect tension of conviction and comfort and empowerment may have also shown them what they were capable of and how far off that they were. And then that forces them to make a decision to actually go for the gold, as it were, or to stay mediocre, as they were, possibly. But also what you say with the holiness, like, so far off the mark. And that's also why when people meet angels and that, they're terrified. Because it's the same with God's holiness and the fear of the Lord. It's like, you are so big and so powerful and so possible, or your capacity is so large, so much larger than mine, that I fear, and I feel terror. And so I wonder if that's what it was, that they were just terrified by the spiritual power of Moses' face, or the weirdness of it.
Yeah. And
it could be both.
Could have been.
Like, if you saw someone with a glowy face and you'd never seen someone with a glowy face before, it'd be a little unnerving.
Yeah. I think they used a little bit too much Maybelline or something that morning.
So much Maybelline.
I mean, maybe it's the presence of God, or maybe it's Maybelline.
Maybe it's Maybelline.
Yep.
Well,
yep, that, I guess.
It seems like we've found our way to the end of another great episode.
Yes, we have.
Scripture Read Badly, number 40.
Mm.
We've made it. 4 decades.
Yep, we did it. 4 decades of episodes.
4 decades of episodes.
In episode years, I guess.
So that's what? 90 chapters. And a lot of side tangents to get to episode 40. That's pretty good.
Yep. Yep. Not bad at all. Well, I mean, there's only 50 chapters in Genesis, and this was chapter 34 of Exodus, so it's only been 84 chapters.
Oh, yeah. That's some good maths. Shout out to the Australian schooling system.
Yay. Okay, great. Well, this is the end of episode 40. We hope you've enjoyed it. We have various things that we do in real life as well. I have a fledgling video production business called Ryan Winslade Videography and Composition that you can find on Facebook. And Jeremy, what do you have?
I draw buildings.
Yes,
and make
he does.
Postcards if you want either of those. And I blog sometimes at DonateTrash.com, and currently I'm the interim pastor of the International Church in Vilnius.
Come on.
So if you're ever in Vilnius, come check us out. We have meals sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this Friday, tomorrow, we're doing the Stations of the Cross. It's going to be sweet.
Wow. That's fantastic. I like that. I'm in Vilnius like 4 or 5 times a week, so...
That would be the best. You just turned up one day like, hey, dude, I'm just here for a few days.
Yeah.
Best.
Yeah, it's my university. They just sent me to Vilnius for a few days.
Oh, there's a very good university here. Probably not so much for video, but
yeah, well,
it's all right.
Yeah, I get by.
Bumblebee Tuner.
Yep, that's the end. If you want, you can check out our Patreon, patreon.com/scriptureadbadly, and you can get a couple bonus episodes a month. If you want to contribute, be part of that. That'd be awesome.
And kisses if you're in our vicinity.
Yeah, that's right. Plenty of kisses.
Yep.
Yep, that's it. Thanks, guys. You're awesome.
Peace out.